step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Dzień dobry, dzień dobry. Long time no here, jakbyśmy to powiedzieli w naszym przeojczystym języku. Ale long time no here jest nie bez kozery, bo jak tutaj już powoli otworzę wór z mądrościami. Dziś spotykamy się w 31. odcinku Ludzi z Pracy i w pierwszym odcinku Ludzi z Pracy nie po polsku. But before we switch to English, let's have a small intro in Polish. Niedawno przeczytałam i obejrzałam, bo to jest książka bardzo superowo ilustrowana, książkę Cup of Therapy w polskim tłumaczeniu i wydaniu wydawnictwa Znak. Ona się nazywa Cup of Therapy, jak dbać o siebie, by być szczęśliwym i dawać szczęście innym. No i ona tak wygląda raczej jakby była trochę dla dzieci, trochę dla nastolatków i o tym też zresztą z autorami będę rozmawiać. Napisali ją Finowie, terapeuta Antti Ervasti, a ilustrował Matti Pikujansa. I oczywiście jak tylko dojechałam do końca części o pracy, a część o pracy stanowi w tej książce jakieś ponad 2/3, to od razu pomyślałam, że muszę ich wyciągnąć na pogadanie i musicie koniecznie tych gości poznać. No i super się cieszę, że się udało i właśnie z Antim i z Matim będziemy dziś psychologicznie i psychoterapeutycznie rozmawiać o tym, jak dbać o siebie, kiedy chcemy się spełniać zawodowo, dlaczego to jest takie trudne, no i z jakimi demonami musimy się w całym tym procesie zmierzyć. Hi, hello, it's Rose. Welcome to the 31st episode of the podcast Ludzie z Pracy, which means people from work in English. You are listening to the most people-oriented podcast about work, and it is dedicated to everyone who works with people and would like to understand them better. It doesn't matter whether you run a company, lead a team, or just simply want to help someone in everyday work situations, including yourself, of course. Because work takes too much place in our daily life to do it and not understand your teammates. Feel invited to visit Spotify, YouTube, Apple and Google Podcasts to listen to Ludzie z Pracy. Don't forget to subscribe and follow to have the latest information. Welcome to Ludzie z Pracy podcast, so people from work in English. It's our 31st episode. And the first episode in English, actually. Today I have a pleasure to meet with Antti Ervasti and Matti Pikujansa, who are authors of the book A Cup of Therapy, which in Poland was published by Znak Publishing House. The reason why I talk today with my guests is that they decided to publish the book based on therapy, of treating ourselves. Also due to the fact that Ludzie z Pracy is about mechanisms between people at work, explaining situations which might be challenging and might be difficult. It's definitely worth mentioning how communication and social psychology is important. So thank you very, very much for being here today, Antti, Matti, and for agreeing for our meeting. And if I can ask you to shortly introduce yourself, what are you doing on a daily basis and how the idea to make a book together started, it would be great for a start.
Okay, I can start. My name is Antti Ervasti and I work as a psychotherapist here in Helsinki, Finland. And I work mostly with couples. Maybe around 70-80% of my clients are couples, and then rest are like individual clients. So I do therapy work on a daily basis, and then also couple therapy, doing couple therapy pictures and books. We are currently working on our third book, so that also takes quite a lot of time. So That keeps me busy.
Mm-hmm. My name is Matti Pikujansa. I'm an illustrator of this project. And I work as a freelancer and I do lots of magazine and newspaper illustrations, and some children book illustrations mm-hmm. and that kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and is it like your first project you are doing together, or a Cup of Therapy is like a bigger one? Could you tell us like more context about that?
Yeah, Cup of Therapy is our first project together. We started doing, I think we did the first Cup of Therapy picture 2017. It was May 2017. And we have been talking about doing something together, maybe illustrating or doing a children's book or adults picture book, but we never really had time to do it. So then we just started talking about some topics that I've encountered in my work. Of mm-hmm. course, I can't talk in detail, but I was just talking about themes that I had faced in my work. And then we just did a first couple of pictures, like really kind of spontaneously. And then we thought that, okay, there might be something to it, that maybe we can continue doing it. So it kind of really, we didn't plan to start couple therapy. So we kind of,
it was born very naturally and very spontaneously from the coffee table. And I always draw these pictures still to my sketchbooks with the black brush pen. So we can do it wherever we are and very fast. Mm-hmm. So we can just take a photo and publish it in Instagram or Facebook right away.
Okay.
So first we started the Instagram page, which is the same as now, Cup of Therapy. And then we were approached by a few publishing companies in Finland that they suggested that if we want to publish our pictures as a book, and then mm-hmm. we said, of course we are interested. And the reason why we started doing these pictures in the first place was that we wanted to make mental health visible. We wanted to, and we still want to normalize talking about mental health issues. It doesn't have to be serious mental illness, but anything to do with mental health, because we all have mental health like we have physical health. And still, despite that in Scandinavia, we have quite progressed, that we talk quite openly about going to therapy or suffering from mental health issues, like maybe being tired at work, we still have this stigma of that we can't talk about mental health. There's still too much shame and guilt mm-hmm. related to these issues. So that is the core message of couple therapy. We want to normalize talking about mental health.
Yes, mm-hmm. and make people more relaxed about these things. Because always when you see the word mental health, always the illustration with it is something very serious, very dark, very, in a way, neutral, something like an image stock-like or something. So we wanted to mm-hmm. like make it more vivid and something people can kind of identify with.
Okay.
And maybe share and so on. So sometimes we can add a humor to things that are difficult even.
Mm-hmm. And what about the idea of using animals for that? Because I understand the idea that it is like normalizing. But on the other hand, I see the risk that adults in Poland, for example, can take the book and think like, okay, maybe it's the book for the children. I'm too old for that. Have you thought about that risk or any other risk you were considering during making that choice?
Yes, very carefully. So it's like our strategy even. So I've been doing lots of books for children, but I think personally, I enjoy some children book to be read by adult. So the choosing animals is because that way we can avoid kind of like a, how to say, like a gender mm-hmm. and cultural things and so on. So animals are good neutral symbols for us people. Mm-hmm. And also they represent different kind of personalities or kind of like a mental sides of human in a like a traditional folk tales or like a mythology or so on. So we can play with that. So mm-hmm. I can, for example, choose like some stereotypical bat animal, like some evil one, snake or wolf, mm-hmm. and turn that into something good one or mm-hmm. fragile. So we can kind of break the stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And also I think like in a way it's easier to identify with animals. If I use like a human characters, so maybe that would become too sensitive or something too embarrassing or something too serious.
Yeah, too serious or too difficult, because we cover like quite a lot of heavy themes, like we
eating disorders.
So we cover really difficult issues. So I think if we would use humans our pictures might be too much. They might be maybe in a way traumatizing, or they might be in a way off-putting. But since we use animals, people can still, at surface, our pictures look very light.
Okay. You've mentioned stereotypes, and you've mentioned also it is very challenging to normalize mental illnesses, even in a regular normal life, especially according to the work and to that environment. I'm interested, what is your approach to cultural differences according to that? Because of the fact that in general, of course, being aware that generalization is always the wrong way, but in general, still, we can say that, I know, Americans, for example, are defined by work. Polish people are rather defined by family or health. And I don't know how it works for Finns. Is like work important to you according to your thinking about yourself? How important it is for you in general when you are talking about your community, your nation?
Especially now when we have publishing deals in many different countries, like in Asia and then in Poland and in Germany and in Greece, etc. So we have to be more careful in the future. So we will try to include each version, for example, the version in Poland. We want to check with our publishing house that are the pictures correct? Are they like, do they suit your cultural context? Because with the first book, we really didn't have to do it because we only had publishing deals in Finland. So in the future, we will start collecting more kind of local information so we can modify the pictures according to each area. Well, what I've noticed about mental health, that at the core, we are not so different. I think we all have, despite wherever we live, are we in the Hong Kong or in Helsinki or in New York, we have quite similar needs, like emotional needs, that we need to be seen. We need to have this kind of balance between our work and free time. So, and I think Scandinavia and Finland specifically, we are not so, like, the work doesn't dictate our identity so much, but I think we are quite hardworking nation. And there are a lot of, especially younger people, like 30, 40 year old, who kind of struggle with this work-life balance. So, because the work life is demanding much more, I think we are going towards the more American model, so to speak, that we are expected to kind of do more working hours per week, and some people might not be able to finish their work after the official hours are over. So I think we all need to be quite careful with this work life balance, so we will have energy and time also for our family, for our relationships, for ourselves.
And also this kind of like a freelancer culture. So, and people are everywhere in the world doing more and more this kind of like a small piece work, like bits and pieces here and there. And they collect their income from very different sources and many different clients. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like also very demanding. Like you have to connect all these different clients and different ways of working and thinking. That can also take time, and it can be more risk with kind of divide your free time and your work life. I feel like people are also struggling with that kind of issues all around the world.
They are, and I work with a lot with my clients about, for example, when they are tired at work or they might have burnout, and we really start working on the issues that how much that have they invested on their professional life, that their identity might be totally built around their careers. That's a structure that won't last, because what happens if you can't work? What happens when you after you retire? So I think it's very important. Don't let your life revolve around the work. Try to have the balance. Try to have hobbies. Try to have meaningful relationships. Take your own time, because if we build our identity around any one thing, if it work or hobby, it's very fragile. And I think that's a lot of Finnish people are struggling with that they notice that they only have work.
In Poland, it's exactly the same situation, that we are really struggling with saying that, okay, I'm enough. What's behind it? Is it like, I don't know, trying to prove anyone that we are really hardworking? Or what do you think? What's the mechanism in like our fear of saying that?
I think it can be many, many things. I think first can be that we feel that we are not enough, that we have to continuously prove our worth in the work life. So we have to do more and more, and we might not be expected to do that. Of course, we might have a boss or we might have an organization that demand too much, but then very often it's ourselves who demand too much. So it's very often it's like inability to set boundaries. Mm-hmm. It's inability to say, no, not now, next week, no, I can't do it. It's maybe fear of being rejected. Maybe it's a fear of losing a job. And especially now in the corona times, a lot of people are struggling financially, and especially restaurant and music business and all this, all and many other areas of business, they are really struggling. So a lot of people have more reasons to worry for their job, that will they have a job next year, or if they have lost their job, are they going to find another job? So that will put an extra pressure of, now I need to prove my worth, now I need to do more. Mm-hmm. But also very, very often is that when people are really struggling, like I think we've all been struggling globally this year because of the pandemic. So we might be working from home and we really work high speed. We might not take enough breaks. We might not slow down. And very often when people are overstressed and maybe they're even tired, they, instead of kind of breaking, instead of kind of slowing down, they put more. They start doing more, they put more speed. So I think that's the problem with many people, that they realize that they need to slow down, they need to take a holiday, but they just can't in a way, because they built this system that they always have to do something, they always have to prove their worth, they always have to do something productive. So it's, in a way, it's kind of a negative cycle, which is not easy to break, even if rationally we understand it's not healthy, but when we are in that mode, it's quite difficult to kind of stop.
Yeah, because it's kind of like a vicious circle.
Yeah, vicious circle. Yeah.
Or it could be also kind of like you have so much like a positive sides in the work. Like, exactly. So you are very, like for me, it's kind of like a passion. It started as a passion and it turned into work. So it's kind of like a, what is hobby, what is work? So that can be also dangerous because you can exhaust yourself even more easily.
Mm-hmm. And that's especially with couple therapy, because we don't, of course we take it seriously, but it's not like a job, like a psychotherapy worker, like other illustrating. So we feel that it's kind of like a passion. So we've noticed that even the positive flow, it can be very tiring. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that we don't talk enough, that even positive flow can make you tired if you don't kind of set your pace. Mm-hmm.
Mm. And I don't know if it's also popular in Finland, but for example, in Poland, very popular quote, I don't know, to be honest, who is the author, but it's quite popular that if you are having the job you really love, you don't work a day in your life, because it's like... your passion, and it's like total bullshit. And I think that every rational person is able to see that it's not only the fact that you are having a job you like and you don't work, because it's even really more exhausting when you are working for 8-10 hours per day, even if it's your passion. And it's not true that it's you are not working when you are doing the job you love, but people are repeating it on and on. And I see, like, it was like a week ago, maybe before Christmas, when half of my LinkedIn board was in that quote. And I'm thinking, like, what's going on here?
I would just another quote I heard yesterday. It was Ernest Hemingway has said, like, when you have a really good flow on, you'd better stop. So it's like a kind of, it's about like kind of how the amounts of work and the breaks and the pauses and something and keeping up the energy.
In a way, I understand that quote. One part of me understands perfectly. I think it's meant to that, you know, everybody should in a way find a job or be able to enjoy what they do. But in a way, I also very clearly understand the danger of that quote.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of boundaries and borders, you are also writing about escaping into work. Can you say more or less where is the border? Because sometimes work helps us when we are having like personal troubles or the private issues. Where's the border? Like being safely escaping and when it starts to be dangerous?
And that's a really good question. And I don't I don't think there's any clear boundaries that apply to everybody, but I think it's like, for example, with my clients, I always, when I get to know them and when we start working, I ask, maybe we can draw a kind of circle, like a pie chart, that, you know, can draw that, how big portion is your work, where is your hobbies, do you have children, what is your relationship, what about your own time? Very often the work takes like really big part of their life. And so if they don't have other things except life, if they don't feel like they exist anywhere else besides work, then it can be problematic. Then they probably need to slow down and kind of reorganize their lives. But if they work and they still have time and energy for relationships, friendships, romantic relationships, their own hobbies, if they have other, they sleep enough, then it's not problematic. Mm-hmm. So I think this defines, can define a problem. And very mm-hmm. often people who come to my office, they don't have these kind of clear boundaries that work takes too big portion of their life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But okay. That was a really good question, because I agree with you totally that work, anything else, hobby can be kind of temporary escape, like if we have a personal crisis or other areas of life are struggling. So it's happy that we have a job that we can go in a way to escape temporarily. But some people, unfortunately, they don't realize it, that they just put everything that they have into their work. Like mm-hmm. what I mentioned earlier, work defines their identity, their profession defines their identities. Then very mm-hmm. often these people, they don't know how to exist in other areas of life. They might want a relationship, they might want to spend more time with their children, they might want to have a hobby or kind of other ways to kind of release their passion, but they just don't know how to, because they've been working so much for so long. Mm-hmm. So then mm-hmm. it's then it can be really problematic.
Okay. So do I take you correctly that like the first alarming thing when we are thinking about work-life balance and what can be like a red light for us or the yellow light, let's say, it would be like lack of diversification. If we mm-hmm. put everything in one area in our life, it can be risky. And also the second thing you mentioned, that you are not able to stop. You are part of this vicious circle we've mentioned, and you are even not able to call it by its name.
Yeah, you understand perfectly, exactly. And then the problem with this kind of becoming, for example, tired or even have a burnout at work, it's gradual. So to some point, people might realize that they need to stop, but then the vicious cycle is so going on so fast that they don't know how to stop. And then very often they might have some physical problems also, like they can't sleep anymore. They wake up in the middle of the night. They worry about things. They might have like issues with their blood pressure and of course, like stress can kill. So mm-hmm. if we don't listen to our minds that when we need to slow down or stop, our physical body will also start giving symptoms. And very often, for example, with my clients, they have both symptoms. They have emotional and mental symptoms, and they also have physical problems because mm-hmm. they've been pushing themselves so hard for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. it's very good that you said the yellow light. So I think everybody should slow down when it's the yellow light, because when it's the red light, then it might be, it's not too late. I don't think it's ever too late, but when it's red, it will take more drastic measures to kind mm-hmm. of correct the situation. So I think we also have this kind of traffic light system that, am I on a green light? Okay, now I'm going on a yellow light. Now I really need to take a step back, because that symbolism is very good, not only relating to work, but in every other area, like how are we exercising? How are we eating? So we should listen mm-hmm. to ourselves more carefully.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And according to what you say, because on one hand, I think that everyone would agree that it's much more healthy keeping this distance to work. It's like super important. But on the other hand, we are having all these people who are doing a lot, being 30, being 25, being very smart in a very young age. How to be assertive in that kind of world?
when we are like opening the Forbes and we are looking at our friends who are there in the age of 25 and we are not, because we are, you know, choosing Sunday on bicycle, not at work. I think it's difficult when you are looking at other people who are really running and winning.
It is. That's a really, 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 really good and important theme. And I think if I could only say one sentence, like, it would be that stop comparing yourselves to others. But I know that that's easier said than done, because I think we all compare ourselves to others. At least I recognize that I compare myself to my colleagues quite a lot. And I do recognize that at times I'm very jealous of their success. And jealousy is also a very normal feeling if you are able to listen to it. And very often jealousy can tell you that maybe you should do things differently, maybe you should study something so you can achieve something similar. But in the end, there's really no point of comparing yourself, because these Forbes lists or other lists are that it's very important to understand that what we see in the social media and what we see in the papers, that's not the full reality. And I do understand, and I do realize that there might be a lot of people on this Forbes list and the most powerful, most influential list that are actually, they are very talented and they have a very good work-life balance. But then there are also a lot of people who have climbed to the top of the food chain, but they have made huge sacrifices. They might have made sacrifices that I'm not willing to do. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to realize that if they reach the top, that's not an easy place to stay, and nobody gets to the top without doing any sacrifices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great thing. I'm smiling because that's the great thing you are talking about, that we are usually not aware of the costs the people pay, especially in the startup world. It's quite common situation that you are talking to startup which is like super successful and is raising a round, like the first series or the father rounds, super successful founders, and everyone is like, wow, they are so cool. And after 5 years, you are meeting them and they've already climbed that mountain. But after that, no one knows what's happening. And this is for us as psychologists, this is the most crucial moment when you can be aware and learn from these experiences, which are very often really difficult and terrible and hard for these people, but no one knows about that.
Of course, it's not always about choosing one or the other. We can prioritize our lives, and I think we can all achieve much more than we do in our everyday life. But we really need to be careful about if we choose this specific road, what does it require from us?
Is it like any specific thing according to the fact that you are famous, you and Danish people, you are famous for, I don't know if I pronounce it well, like sisu, your type of happiness, or like Danish hygge? Is it like anything specific in it? I think that in our country, it's common to look at Scandinavians and ask like, okay, so what's so specific about that?
That's a good question. I think Danish and Swedish people are always considered more happy than Finnish people.
Okay.
Like Finland is part of Scandinavia, but we are in a way a bit different to other Scandinavian countries. I think Danish and Swedish and Norwegian people also, they are more positive, more happy. They are more like, for example, Swedish people are more like, they have this more small talk culture. I think Finnish, traditionally, we've been very kind of like, if you ask us, how are you doing? We said, oh, I'm okay. Nothing special. If you compliment our food, we're like, oh, this is just something. Thank you. I just did it. Like,
you have nice clothes. Okay. Well, is that just old work?
Yeah. So we are.
Okay.
Finnish people traditionally, we are not used to kind of boasting about. We are not really accustomed to talk about positive things so much. So I think we have learned a lot. But I think the sisu is something that you also must have a lot of experience in Poland, because sisu means that we're resilient and we persevere. No matter how difficult the circumstances are, we still move forward and we never give up. Sisu is a Finnish word, so I think every country, every culture had a similar resilience. But I think Finnish people are very stubborn in a way, because we don't have our history. There have been a lot of wars, and we've been under Russian invasion and other Swedish invasion. And we haven't been independent for a bit over 100 years now. So we have really, and we are in a way from rural culture, a lot of farming. So we are very kind of stubborn and nation, and also we don't give up easily. So I think that's maybe that's one key to our happiness.
And it's kind of, Sisu is something I think as like a hidden optimism. So it's like a, in the form of something a bit aggressive. So it's kind of like a kick ass thing, but you have to believe in the thing you do to have Sisu. So that's something very Finnish. You don't show your positive emotions or something like optimism, but you do it.
That's very interesting, because it really sounds like a Polish attitude. And it's because of the fact that our history is like super difficult, fighting for having an option to have our own country move forward and to follow up and to develop. It sounds like super, super similar. And wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, super similar. And I think, we always get asked when we talk about our books with foreign people, they always ask that Finland is supposed to be one of the most happy countries. I think we are, but it doesn't mean that we are always happy and positive. I think the happiness studies are based on, like, because we have free education, we have very good gender equality, we have very tolerant atmosphere for sexuality, sexual minorities, etc. So we are kind of, all these values are very good in Finland. So I think that's why we are always ranked quite high on the happiness list. But then again, Finland has a lot of suicides. We have a lot of alcoholism. We have a lot of depression. So we are not in a, we are definitely not a perfect country. But I think that these core principles, like gender equality and how to treat people and how to treat foreigners and how to treat diversity, I think we are very successful in that list. And as a Finnish person, I'm very proud of that.
Okay, thank you very much, Antti, Matti, for your time.
We're always happy that we can really dig deeper. We just don't. So we have plenty of time to talk about the message of our books and about our concept. So I think I'm very happy for this opportunity. And just, you know, I hope people who buy our book and read our book, I hope they receive some genuine comfort or humor or empowerment or whatever they are seeking. I hope they find this in our book.
I totally confirm that the book is absolutely great. These guys you are listening to, I think it's the best proof. So thank you once again for your time. Thank you for today. And as you know, we are available on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube and on the website of the company, hrhints.io. And yeah, go to the bookstore after listening to us today and buy Cup of Therapy, published by Znak Publishing House. It's in Polish with great illustrations and giving the great sense of work-life balance and work understanding. Thank you very, very much once again for being with us today, Antti, Matti.
Thank you very much.
No i to tyle. I tak oto 31. odcinkiem Ludzi z Pracy otworzyliśmy rok 2021. 2020, jak już pisałam i na fejsie, i na LinkedInie, na HR Hints, to był rok bardzo wielu zrobionych rzeczy i bardzo, bardzo ciężkiej pracy. Także z tego też powodu słyszeliśmy się rzadko w drugiej połowie roku, ale sięgnę od razu do wora z mądrościami. Co się odwlecze, to nie uciecze. Bardzo jestem ciekawa, co myślicie o tej trochę innej niż polska perspektywie, którą dzisiaj usłyszeliście. No i w ogóle, co myślicie o formie wywiadów, które mogłyby przeplatać moje monologi i moją gadającą głowę? Dajcie znać proszę na fejsie, na LinkedInie, na YouTubie. Subskrybujcie, followujcie Ludzi z Pracy. Oceńcie, jak się Wam podoba, dajcie znać i oczywiście przekażcie dalej, jeśli uważacie, że komuś taka przestrzeń rozmowy w sieci może się przydać. Ten podcast jest, jak wiecie, w YouTubie, w Spotify'u, w aplikacjach do podcastów iPhone'a i Androida. Na dzisiaj wielkie, wielkie dzięki. Trzymajcie się i powodzenia z Ludźmi z Pracy. Pa!
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.